Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat. Hello and welcome to All Things Policy. I'm Manoj Kewalramani and I'm joined by Shambhavi Nayak, and we're again going to be talking about the coronavirus like we do every week. We try and provide an update on what's been happening, what are the numbers of cases, is this at now a pandemic level or are we not there as yet, and what are the sort of threats that different countries are facing, how are they looking to address it, what is the sort of political, economic and all the other sort of related challenges of this virus that's spreading around the world. To begin with, let's just look at the numbers from where things have started, which is in China. Once again, Hubei is the province which is worst hurt, and there was a lot of confusion in Hubei this week with regard to restrictions in Wuhan being lifted on people coming in and going out. And there was a notification that was issued and which was immediately after that rescinded. So which tells you a little bit about how even in a tightly controlled information environment like China, you can have such confusion within the bureaucracy that this sort of confusion ensued for a period of 24 hours. But sort of the big numbers this week are that we are at about 78,000 cases within China and Taiwan. So that's Greater China. And internationally also, there's been a spike in cases. The total death toll within China, again, is at about 2,666. These numbers will change a little bit by the time this episode goes on air. From a Chinese point of view, the big sort of top line has been that the rate of increase of cases has gone down. Now, there's lots of speculation about this because suddenly this number has crashed. It could be because of, again, like last week we spoke about them tightening the testing mechanism again. But there's also a case to be made that internationally the spike in cases has been very sudden. So Shambhavi, you were talking about South Korea, Japan, and yeah. Does that then match up?
Yeah, so Japan now has about 850 cases. South Korea reported 60 new cases yesterday, which was Monday, leading to a total number of 893 cases in South Korea. Iran has had 61 cases with 12 deaths. Italy is emerging as a hotspot in Europe with 200 cases so far. So suddenly there's a shift in the trend. So far we were seeing a majority of cases being limited to China, but now we are seeing a lot more cases outside.
Yeah.
Of China.
And also last week, I remember when we were talking and we were looking at the numbers, apart from Japan, because of the Diamond Princess, numbers around the rest of the world were in double digits.
Yeah.
And now suddenly you're seeing these triple digit numbers and more deaths, right?
Yeah. And the one place we have not got any information from is obviously North Korea.
Yep.
So we have absolutely no idea.
Yeah, that's another black box altogether.
What's happening there?
Yeah.
But yeah, speaking of the Diamond Princess, there were 12 Indians who have been infected with the coronavirus on board the Diamond Princess, mostly crew, but they have been quarantined and kept there for recovery.
Okay, so that's another Indian incidence which otherwise would not have gotten counted because they would not have been in the country. But see, that's the thing, like in such an environment where people are on a ship and that ship is quarantined now, how do you treat, how do you sort of contain the infection, and the chances of people on that vessel getting infected is so high.
It's so high, yeah.
I mean, we spoke last week, right, about this case where in China, this quarantines are creating clusters of infections.
Yeah.
So it's the same case, right?
I mean, it is the same case. I mean, when I first heard about it, I was like, wow,
this
is a little surprising. Because you are in a closed vessel and you are basically there with people that we know have the infections.
Yeah.
And so what has happened as a result of that is people who have now been deboarded are also kept in quarantine.
Yeah.
So you're stuck in quarantine for some time and then you're stuck once you get out.
And it's extremely tricky to know how long you're going to keep people in quarantine.
Yeah.
Initially, we knew that, the virus can show its sort of symptoms and the effects can be seen anywhere between 2 days to 14 days. This week, there was a conversation about, well, some people have shown them even after 20, 25 days. So now that threshold has gone up to 27 days, which is a month.
And the other thing was about, so for example, a lot of countries around the world put up this thermometer testing at airports. So you're screened for your body temperature.
Yeah.
And if your body temperature is high, you are basically sent for further diagnosis.
Yeah.
So if you don't know how long you can be infecting people, Or how long it takes for you to actually have a fever because you have got infected. You're basically missing out a lot of people.
Yeah.
So even if we have a quarantine period that we know of,
yeah.
we still don't know what testing needs to be done and when it needs to be done to really make sure that you are coronavirus free.
I mean, the fact that this is spreading is for many reasons. It's very difficult, therefore, to devise policy because how long are you going to keep people and how many people are you going to
yeah.
keep quarantined?
Yeah.
Right?
And so, like, I remember in one of our initial episodes on this, we spoke about the infectivity of a person and we said that up to 4 people can be infected. Now they're trying to find super spreaders.
Hmm.
So for example, in South Korea, they have tried to say that there's a church which basically is the epicenter for the outbreak in South Korea. And this one person is supposed to have spread the virus to 37 people.
Hmm.
So now they're actually going to go and either quarantine or put under house quarantine the 200,000 odd people who were at that church at that same point of time. But there is this concept that a single person might be able to spread to more than the average population does. So for example, in 2015, when we had the MERS outbreak, which is also a coronavirus outbreak, they had one patient who infected 82 people.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. So, and we really don't know the biology of how this works or why these people can infect more people. So there are two theories. Either their immune system is very weak, so they show symptoms, but the viral load is so much that they actually infect a lot of other people. Or that their immune system is so good at suppressing the virus that they don't show symptoms.
Yeah.
But they have the virus and they can spread the virus.
Yeah, which is where my mind sort of first went to that, right?
You know, yeah, so they're called super shedders.
Okay.
They're shedding a lot of virus.
Okay. So how have these countries now, so we're still looking at Japan, we're looking at South Korea, even the US, how are these countries now responding? So in US, I remember you were telling me that, you know, they're looking at new money to be raised.
Yeah, yeah. So the Trump administration has asked for $2.5 billion from the Congress as money to actually fight the infection. And they have said that about $1 billion of this will actually go into the creation of a vaccine.
So you said $2.5 billion.
Yes.
So the remaining $1.5 billion will go to build a wall?
Against the virus, very likely, yes.
So you're probably going to see a new, big, beautiful antivirus wall.
Yes.
Okay. Makes sense. So, apart from that, there's also work on a vaccine that's been going on, right? You were telling me that there is some sort of vaccine that's been tested.
There are obviously many companies which are trying to invest in finding a vaccine. There is one company, Moderna, in the US, a Boston-based company, which has put forward a candidate to the US National Institute of Health. And we have to wait and see whether it's approved for human trials or not. But even if it is, we are still months away from actually getting a vaccine that is ready for human administration.
Okay.
So even if next week the National Institute of Health comes and says that this candidate is approved for human trials, we are still a fair few months
away. So the other thing that we were talking about was that, and this links back to this idea of super spreaders, right? Have you seen this in China, that events have been pushed back? This week we finally got an announcement that that much anticipated decision on that National People's Congress, the parliamentary meeting will not be happening in March as scheduled, and they haven't even announced a date when it will be happening. The NPC Standing Committee, which is the executive body of the National People's Congress, they met and they sort of also tightened the regulation on animal trade. And things like that.
Yeah, they banned wildlife trading.
Yeah, which is, you know, I mean, after the horse has been bolted, you shut the door. And so, anyway, so that's what you've done so far. But it also impacts not just events in China. So, a lot of things in China are going to get pushed back. I mean, we spoke about the Grand Prix in Shanghai. We spoke about other events. We spoke about trade fairs.
Yeah.
All of that's going to get pushed back. But even internationally, there's now a question about the Olympics in Tokyo, which is scheduled for 2020 July, right?
Yeah, that's scheduled for July. And till last week, there was absolutely no shadow because everyone was saying that the Olympics will still go on. This week, for the first time, Japan has come out and said that it's too early to say whether we'll postpone or not. So there's a hint there that it's on the table, but it's still not off the table.
Okay. Yeah. They're still sort of scheduled unless things change or things get contained.
Yeah, I think it's just, I don't think we have enough information about this outbreak.
Yeah.
I mean,
the one lot of people who would sort of disagree with you are these hardcore China watchers who will constantly read things into different statements. So this week, Xi Jinping appeared in public and this was a grand televised event where he and the entire Politburo Standing Committee appeared without wearing masks. So and they spoke to hundreds of thousands of cadres, talking to them about what sort of efforts need to be made. And there's some really interesting stuff that he said in the speech. So he calls this as both a crisis and in a big test for us, and I'm quoting him here. He says that the epidemic remains grim and complex, and it is now the most crucial moment to curb its spread. He also talks about this being a major public health emergency since the founding of the People's Republic of China. There are a couple of other interesting aspects of his big speech in which he talks about how in January 2018, there was a meeting which happened after the National Party Congress in 2017, in which he assumed his second term as the general secretary of the party. He sort of recounted that meeting and said, you know, way back then I had spoken about the importance of being prepared to contain infectious diseases and epidemics that could spread like SARS and things like that. So at some level, he's sort of managing his political position. So it's interesting how people have read this. I mean, at one level, he's also saying things like, you know, we are brilliantly positioned to tackle this because our system gives us certain kinds of strengths, which is slightly paradoxical as an argument, given that lots of people have argued that the spread of this disease and the failure of the initial efforts in the province was a product of the authoritarian nature of the Chinese state. But he's sort of come out and defended all of that. And there's two sort of interesting strands of thought that go on, right? One is that there is a serious crisis, and he's sort of putting it out that there is a serious crisis, and he's outlining that this is going to be painful, this is going to be problematic, and he's sort of taking ownership of the crisis. While you remember, you know, in January you were talking about him passing the buck to Li Keqiang. So that's one thought. The other thought is that there is a serious crisis, but he feels like he's in control of things and things will get resolved, or at least they will be able to get a handle on things. And this is sort of backed up by some of the data that they're putting out. Whether you trust the data or not is a separate question. But if you see that the numbers are declining, and it is at this point when numbers are declining to this degree, he comes out and he says, look, this is a historic crisis. And, you know, it's only us who can solve it for you. And then, say, a month down the road, he says, we solved a historic crisis. You know, who's the man? That sort of logic. And that sort of is then him.
I think his case might be bolstered if outbreaks outside of China keep on increasing.
Exactly. So, So then at least he can say, look, we contain things here, but outside things are increasing. But also it could be the case that, you know, and the Chinese have made a case of this that, you know, and there was a Bloomberg piece on this also. The China has sacrificed a province or a city to save the world. And they've also made that argument that we've made these choices to essentially help everybody else around the world. And that's been one strand of thought. So therefore, I was saying that, you know, hardcore cynics will say that it's actually getting better. And this is him sort of this is political opportunism. Whereas others would say that, no, actually things are really terrible. And I guess the proof of the pudding in all of this would be in the final economic numbers. Because he might take credit for whatever. If the economy is not kickstarting, it's going to be really problematic for him. So that's, I think, one thing that, you know, one needs to keep in mind. There are so many strange strands to this particular story that it's very difficult to sort of capture everything.
So you started off by talking about how great, how much Xi Jinping will say how great China's system is and how information is easy for them to pass on. We in India actually seem to have a bit of trouble currently. Over the weekend, on WhatsApp, there was this notification which said that the Director General for Foreign Trade had again banned all exports of masks and PPE. So if you remember, in January, they had put out a notification that banned all exports. Then they amended it to say that 3-ply and 2-ply masks can be sent out of India. And then over this weekend, there was again this rumor that everything has been banned again. And so customs actually shut down shipping of masks and stuff for about a day. Then the DGFT had to come out and say that, no, we never issued such a notification again. This is a false notice. And I really don't understand why would somebody do something so horrible.
It's so easy to play mischief in an environment where you've already had a ban and very soon the ban was lifted partially. It's so easy to play mischief, particularly in this sort of era of misinformation.
And you can tell the poor customs guys, right? Because they really don't know. And there's the way to check with a superior is going to be probably so difficult. We lost an entire day, and which means that masks which are supposed to go out to contain this outbreak have been stalled, which is horrible. The other thing that obviously also happened is that the government of India has revoked the FCRA qualification for Manipal University. So Manipal University has been working with a lot of pathogenic viruses, Nipah being the most known case. They actually played a role in identifying the Nipah outbreak in 2018 in Kerala. And they did it faster than the National Institute of Virology in Pune, which is an ICMR center. And that actually bought up at least 24 hours to 48 hours of time for Kerala government to start quarantining people. Mm. So recently, there has been a lot of introspection by the ICMR on foreign collaborations. We had a case where one of the NCBSS studies was under investigation. Now we had this case with the Manipal Institute of Virology. And they have basically stopped Manipal from receiving any funds from the US, which Manipal was doing to build infrastructure to do a study on looking at how fevers are caused.
Hmm.
So the idea is that about 50% cases of fevers, we do not know what the causative agent is.
Okay.
So whether it's a virus, it's a bacteria, what virus is causing it. And if we do not know what causes the fever, we can't treat it.
Yeah.
So A, we can't treat it. B, the immediate response is to give antibiotics,
yeah.
Which is causing a rise in antibiotic resistance as well. So at least even if we can't tell which virus it is, if we can tell it is not a bacteria, we can stop this whole antibiotic process.
Yeah. Right?
So Manipal Institute was one of the Sentinel surveillance centers for this study. And they were actively trying to figure out what was causing fevers, at least in this geographical region. And stopping that at this point of time, when the world is in the grip of an outbreak.
Yeah.
Just sounds so stupid.
Yeah, it just sounds really strange. Why would you do that? Unless there's something deep that we have no idea about.
Of course, of course. But still, I mean, we if there's an outbreak now, we really need to be operating at full capacity. Our capacity is anyways nowhere close to optimal.
Yeah.
But we need to make sure that if the outbreak comes to India, we can pick it up as soon as it does.
Yeah, it's really strange that we're making some of these choices make no sense in the broader sort of, when you look at it in the broader sense, it makes no sense. I mean, another choice that makes no sense is what the Chinese are doing with this, in the Indian jet. I mean, by the time this episode goes on air, we know that on the February 26th, the Indian jet is supposed to go, the C-17 carrying supplies from India is supposed to land in Wuhan. But this is supposed to happen nearly 10 days ago.
Yeah.
And for some strange reason, there was no clearance given to this. Even today, there's no clarity on why the Chinese held this up. Every other day when the foreign ministry in China would be asked as to which countries are helping China and which countries have been supportive, and they'd put out a list of countries.
Yeah.
And ever since, I think, Prime Minister Modi's letter to Xi Jinping, India has said that we're going to be giving this aid, we're going to be giving this aid. It's just incredible as to why this was held up. And the jet was supposed to go in, not just deliver supplies, but it's also supposed to bring back Indians in Wuhan.
Yeah.
That's incredibly myopic policy from a Chinese point of view. Firstly, you're holding Indian citizens hostage, which is just ludicrous. You can't do that.
Mm.
Other countries have been given this freedom. An Indian jet, you know, Indian planes have already gone in the past. The two jets have already gone. Air India planes went to evacuate Indians. It just makes no sense to me as to why they delayed it. And I mean, good on the Indian embassy over there to make a fuss about this and raise this issue publicly to at least embarrass them enough to realize that what they're doing is incredibly stupid. At one level, you're asking for more support and trust from India. At another level, you know, you're essentially holding Indians hostage, which is just a horrible, horrible optics. It's just horrible optics from a point of view of, you know, you come to India for, you know, you have these informal summits and you talk about people-to-people exchanges.
Yeah.
And that's the worst thing that you can do.
It's so strange. I mean, the idea of these outbreaks and the kind of clarity it brings to policy recommendations to how you are to manage yourself politically versus managing panic in your people and trying to manage the economic situation. How do you prioritize all of that? I think this is a really good test.
Yeah, it will be an interesting case study once all this sort of subsides, once this current chaos, because right now it's essentially week by week, and as people who've been listening to us can figure out that it's a every week, the situation changes so dramatically and something completely new develops. There are newer sort of angles to the story and it becomes very difficult to sort of, for a politician, decision maker in charge to start to figure out, well, this is my priority and this is what I should be doing. That can change within 24 hours and change quite dramatically. And how do you then sort of reevaluate? And you can't really make decisions unless you get accurate information. How do you verify and trust? And
I think that is that has been our main problem, has been to get correct data in time to be able to take steps.
Well, okay. So I think we've covered everything that we wanted to talk about in terms of what's happened in the week.
Yeah.
And just hoping that on Thursday, as you're listening to this, things have not dramatically changed. But even if they have, at least you have a sense of what's been happening so far. Thank you so much for listening to us. Thank you so much, Ambavi.
Thank you, Manoj.
And do keep listening to All Things Policy. If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network.
You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is at IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle at takshashilainst or our website takshashila.org.in.